some prototypes or developmental models were already in the making, but a new, more refined design was going on, and we had the opportunity of putting in really new ideas as far as reducing size was concerned and improving safety, because these things at those times were still hot items, and every once in a while something blew up without really us knowing what the cause for it was. And the particular task was not one or the other item, but we were still roaming at this time because there were so many problems, and you could bring in any amount of new ideas in this thing. I remember, for example, that in laboratory tests it was found that to pressurize the liquid oxygen tank, we were hardly able to come up to pressure in a fast enough time to start this combustion process, injection first and combustion process in the engine, because what happened was that the nitrogen that was used for pressurizing these tanks just simply condensed into the liquid oxygen, and the pressurize was very slow. So since it was my problem to run these laboratory tests and get the sequence of pressurize and injection and everything properly in order, I had to look for something to improve this pressurize, and just occurred to me that we should try to put some insulation between the nitrogen gas and the liquid oxygen, and we just thought of a primitive thing which helped us a lot in the beginning. We just asked our carpenter shop to turn for us a couple thousand of little wooden balls and impregnate these with a good boat lacquer, so they wouldn't absorb the water or any other liquid. And these people of course thought we were crazy, but anyhow we got our wooden balls, threw those into the tank. These tanks were spherical, that was a problem. Mm-hmm. And the surface constantly changed if the liquid was driven out. And these little wooden balls did our first trick in giving us a fast pressurized at the same time made a lot of noise, of course, when the nitrogen suddenly entered into the tank. Anyhow, this just shows that everything was completely open for new ideas and exotic ideas, and this is what we had there in these days or time.
Did you have any particular memories of the first time they tested these on the aircraft?
Yes. There was a time when this new version was to be tested, and the chief designer for this jet assisted takeoff unit was Mr. Dellmeyer.
Dellmeyer, yes. Did he look something like one of
I don't think so, no.
I have a picture of him or someone there working on that engine after it's strung up under the aeroplane. It looks exactly like Brown from the rear, blonde hair from the rear.
This probably was the chief pilot, Erich Bauwitz.
Did he have a...
Erich Bauwitz, he was the chief pilot of Peenemünde West, which was the airport end of the missile or...
Where is he now?
I just read by accident somehow in the last few days his address. He lives now in Switzerland, in the Tessin, and must have the villa there someplace. I could try to pick this address up. Yeah, I don't know where I read it, just by accident. Okay. Yeah, it's Barbara.
Yeah, I heard his name many times.
Yeah.
Well, that's how you
report. I will try to pick this up for you. After many static tests with this takeoff on test stand 4, which we attended always, since if anything went wrong, it was the valve, and we were always called in to stand by and see firsthand which of our valves or which sequence did go wrong. For the first flight test, when Herr Dellmeyer was invited to fly along, because there may have been the little additional insurance of the chief pilot that he wanted to be very sure that the units are now okay to put on an airplane, that he asked Herr Dellmeyer to attend this flight. Herr Dellmeyer, he looked very pale. It was amazing. We stood there at about the point where the takeoff from the ground was to take place. So they came rolling down first with the normal engine. It was a Heinkel 111 airplane. At a certain speed, they cut in the two the units, what they were called, and with a tremendous thunder and dust going off from the ground, Erich Wasitz pulled this thing at a steep angle of approximately 30 to 40 degrees, which was quite a bit at those times, pulled this plane up and held it at this altitude for about 60 seconds, which was approximately the burning time for this. And everybody was standing there and just holding fists and hoping that nothing happens during this phase, and everything was fine. And then he leveled off made a few rounds and came down again. So that was actually certainly, of course, there were quite a few other people in attendance, military from Air Force and Army, and a lot of cameras going at the time. And that was actually then the release for this unit for some preliminary production, as I recall. But actually, it never seemed to have come to this this point. Some more prototypes must have been built, but I don't recall now what may have been the cause. It might have been that the uncertainty or the danger with something like this was considered still too high.
Wasn't in some of the Balder engines, the cold engine?
This may have been a real cause that the Balder engine, the cold engine, was coming into a state of development that one considered this to be a safer thing, not too much after this time. We saw the first small planes designed by Lippitt, I guess, with the Walter engine going up in Peenemünde West. So the start of the effort was somehow it petered out. I mean, there were always tests going on still on test stand 4, particularly with a small 1-ton unit, because that was a basic unit to serve for all sort of development items, different injection systems, and to verify cooling rates and all that sort of thing, and also to make other tests as far as improving pressurizing and improving pressure reduction by was concerned, because this was one of the most difficult items throughout the whole effort. A good pressure reduction valve, which was keeping the low pressure at a very constant level, because from this low pressure, the actual thrust of the unit was dependent, and that was actually my main effort in the following time, to try to develop a very reliable and a very accurate pressure reduction valve, where the pressure, once adjusted, would be kept within a very small tolerance over the whole pressure drop of the high pressure bottles, which were always used as a supply. Then fairly soon, fairly soon after the started the effort, we were called upon to test larger valves for a larger rocket. Of course, there's one thing I forgot to mention, that parallel to the jet-assisted takeoff unit effort, there was always the so-called Artemis missile in constant test and preparation on the test stand, as well as on free firing test on the Triasphalt Oi, which was an island firing range. And certainly this unit contained a lot of vials too, and we were also called upon to improve vials and injection systems, and whatever was to be improved on the performance of this missile to obtain sonic speed, and mainly to test out guns and control equipment. So this was actually a parallel effort along with the Starhawk effort. Another parallel effort, which was very short actually, because it ended with the death of one of the test pilots of Dänemünde West, was the rocket airplane, which was a modified Heinkel 110, if I'm not mistaken, a single engine plane, which had one ton thrust unit right in the back of the tail. And the machine was beefed up with overlaid aluminum plates.
This is 112, I think you probably saw. HG 112?
Probably, or maybe 112.
It was
a one engine plane.
Right, yeah, that's 112. You worked on this too, then?
Worked on this too, and the test pilot that flew this thing was a fellow named Reims, if I'm not mistaken. He died in one of the flights because something must have, some burst must have occurred, and the tail end caught flames and apparently destroyed the radar system, and the machine dived into the Baltic Sea. But here again, I attended one of the test flights, and that was for this time. It was just so fantastic and amazing that it's still in my memory, as if I would attend it today. Reims, I guess. He was starting on the other end of the field, and we were again about at the point of lift off, standing and watching, and then he cut in his unit located in the back, where everybody was still dubious whether thrust coming in at the tail end of the plane would not make this thing unstable, but it really did not. And after he heard that he had the trust and took off, he really put this thing at a very steep angle of maybe again 40 or even more degrees, and it was a sort of a day with partially cloudy skies, and after some 30-40 seconds disappeared behind the clouds with a tremendous thunder, and went into a steep bank. At the time the power plant was shut off, it was again going for about 1 minute time, I believe. We made quite a few flights with it, but unfortunately one of these test flights crashed.
Yeah, and that was the only plane that they only made one?
This was, as far as I knew, the only plane that the rocket engine
installed.
Tail and installed, and
I have a
very good tanks.
Yeah, we have a few pictures of this. Yeah.
This again was a parallel effort where we had to take care of the Vice laboratory of the problems occurring on that, and improve valving and governors and what have you, mainly make functions safer. We had really some problems with those valves for liquid oxygen because everything would freeze up, and quite a few times valves got stuck and test engines exploded because of the wrong timing that occurred. The timing between liquid oxygen, which was not too well known at the time anyhow,
mm-hmm.
and still a matter of experimentation, but if that went wrong, that meant big explosion and destruction of the engine,
yeah.
or part of the test stand at the same time, and this happened quite a few times. Yes, after this time, then the main effort towards a larger rocket was actually the testing of the large so-called 25-ton Ofen. yeah, that was quite Ofen.
Yes, I know.
And again, Vice Laboratory was prominently involved in also taking care of test stand valves and governors. Yeah, those big engines were tested. That was pushed on iron slip, I'm not mistaken. I can't remember his name now exactly.
Well, so we have a record of that.
Yeah, definitely. Anyhow, again, we were always or very often called for these tests because we were supposed to get a first-hand view of whatever could go wrong or where improvements were possible, and it happened quite a few times that engines on the begin or end of tests just busted apart due to some malfunction in the supply system. Of course, the supply system for these first engine tests was not a turbine unit with pumps, as later on in the middle, but in this case, the test stand was set up that two railroad tank cars could be brought into each side of the test stand. One was filled with locked liquid oxygen, and the other one with alcohol, and these tank cars were pressurized out of a tremendously large pressure bottle battery over pressure governors, and those pressurized tank cars then actually delivered the fuel to a piping system and other governors to the motor, to the unit, which was hanging in a fast frame in the test stand. And there, I also recall, since no special valves are available, that big motor-driven valves of Schaeffer and Hülsenberg, that was a famous valve maker in Magdeburg at the time, were used to start the sequence and shut it off. And these valves were so sluggish and working over a clutch that it couldn't be controlled too accurately. By the simple blocking system that blocked this clutch for the critical time of movement, we could remedy this thing and save quite a few engines this way, possibly, because then those valves were just moved by both parts and independent of this clutch which was built in there. Another thing that came to bear on this test stand was our earlier idea of trying to find something to prevent the condensation of liquid nitrogen into the liquid oxygen. In a parallel effort, we have invented a little so-called Firefenichter, a jet destroyer, which was nothing else than a sort of a spider where the nitrogen entering the tank for pressurization was blowing in a lot of small pipes jet against jet to more or less regain by blowing in opposite directions, destroy the high velocity and thereby regain a certain amount of heat, which then prevented this fast condensation. This was also installed in the large tank car. Anyhow, this just shows that by some crazy idea at the time, certain problems were solved. Not in a scientific way, but just
by trial and error
and by common thought, you know. That later on, of course, when more people came there and engineers and from the universities were pulled into research efforts, they all searched and researched through these things and found why they were working these different little things. But at that time, our problems were quite different again.
Now, did you stay with this group all throughout the war?
I stayed with this group all throughout the war. Now, the next thing then was to develop the valve for the V4 missile. And not the V4, A4, that was the Peenemünde designation. V2 was actually not our.
Yeah, no, that was later.
A4. And there again, we made a great number of trial and error investigations on all parts involved. Prototypes were built in our own shop, pressure measurements or flow measurements and measurements of time intervals, closing, opening and things of this nature were performed at our laboratories, and later on at the test stand where the original fuels in case we were only able in the laboratory to use water, and the original fuels were employed. And quite a few times when we needed special materials, in one case, for example, special rubber seals for liquid oxygen valves, we had at our disposal all the power in form of a letter from the over command of affairs or what have you, to go to some manufacturer and stop everything and tell them to do that and while we were waiting. And
that's where the priority.
Yes, this is then when the priority really came into this effort, and we had no trouble from outside supply to get things done as we wanted them done. We had to do this in quite a few instances in the Vice and Governor area. In one case, even I was made for a couple of days the commissioner of pressure reduction valves and traveled in this
capacity
to one of the largest German makers, Dräger in Lübeck, straightened out some priorities for our work.
Did they resist this ever? How did you have priority? That was given by Hitler, I suppose.
Yes, the priority was actually given by them.
But were there other competing people? That's something I've never fully understood.
There were competing
people. Both of you come to a plant, and the guy was from the Army and American Air Force and you.
Yes, Dräger, for example, historically, they were making all the valves and governors for a submarine. So our problem was then to get our priority recognized because they were working for the Navy, for the German Navy.
What do you do? So the guy said, look, I've got the Navy here, they're the ones who give me all the money, and so how do you, and the Navy complained?
Did
you call in the police?
No. We just could present our credentials or letter where the priority assigned to the project was given. That was something like A12 or I don't really recall something like this, some code, a letter and a number, you know.
And that was why the Navy
just said, this is our priority and you better check this with your... there must have been some local or on a level for certain areas, a place which was under the... Minister Speer, I believe. Those priorities were administered and checked.
Yeah.
And this term, then we just told them that our stuff is this priority, and they better check back with their local or regional office concerned. What actually our priority would be.
He could just say this is the number
here and everything else is confidential, you know. Those people working for us at the time had no idea that this was that the pressure regulators, for example, were going into a rocket or something like this. We were not even able to tell them that that was strictly prohibited. We just could get the conditions that this thing has to fill and the time at which we wanted to have a result, you know. So here we were going beyond our technical starting for the first time to go out and talk to certain manufacturers and development people in those factories and tell them exactly what we wanted without telling them that the stuff is going to be used. It was a difficult thing, but those priorities we found cooperation everywhere, and possibly even without the priorities, if the problem was interesting enough and could be solved without great material involvement, you know.
Well, what happened as the war went on and the boom began? Did you have a lot of trouble here getting parts? How did you do it? You had to say, I mean, could your quality stay as high? You had to substitute materials? Did I get valves that were somewhat lower specification? Redundant suppliers set up? The plant was out?
Yeah, there was at some, or let's say the time after the first missiles were fired and all the brass attended and they okay to go ahead with certain prototype production was established, we were called upon to make actually set up the specifications for all those parts. So we developed these things, we knew what we wanted, and we were called upon to set on paper what those valves and whatever the governors and switches and so on were supposed to do and how they were to be tested. And this we for all the parts developed with us and turned this over to a in meantime established a test organization which was which were inspectors from the army that were supposed to supervise this thing, you know, the testing efforts. Now in the meantime, of course, truck vendors were found for mass production of all the valves needed for the V2, and we had to either partially time those, or at least we had to go around, look at their capabilities, whether they were able to do it, and tell them, in our case, especially, tell them what is involved in testing and supplying even testing equipment. That was all more or less centrally done out of Peenemünde, because of the secrecy involved and because of the novelty involved. We required leak proof on certain vials, which was just fantastic for this time, under certain pressures, and developed completely new test equipment to do this sort of thing.
Right.
And this effort was, of course, hampered quite a bit by then by the then proceeding war, I think, because when we traveled, we were delayed quite a bit, or sometimes came to a plant and had been bombed out in the meantime, and things of this nature. But in general, except for the bombing raid on Peenemünde itself, the flow of parts and equipment, as far as I can see it, was there, or was sufficient at least for the prototype series to build a number and complete a number of missiles at the Peenemünde South factory, because it was a South factory. And very many firings of those missiles, static and finally flight tests, successful.
But you broke off your prototype production fairly quickly at the 19th raid in August 41.
Yes, this prototype production was or had to be broken off because the amount of destruction was too high, and possibly since it was known by then that this effort was going on, any continuation probably would have been senseless, because something like this couldn't be concealed, you know, by flying airplanes or so, activities of this magnitude.
Well, now, what as the after the raid and so on, let's get to the end. How you stayed there? That's right. Before you do this first, I think your valve laboratory left. You went out to.
When Peenemünde was bombed, the different sections and divisions were more or less dispersed to places where at least a similar state or some facilities were able to continue this effort in any way. And the laboratory went to Anklam, which was a Fliegerhorst, a little, some small air base. Yeah. Anyhow, we had a hangar there and some other facilities available, and took most of the stuff that was salvaged along and restarted operations there, which were then of course concentrated only on continuing and supporting the E2 effort. There were no other programs or no other development carried on anymore, and we then worked out of Anklam as a connection with Finland, the sun test and activities were still going on there, so we drove back and forth for about 60-80 kilometers distance from there. But Anklam was bombed out one of those days too.
I knew you were there.
Either they knew we were there or they just wanted to level the little airship that we were in there. And again, we had to pack our stuff, the remaining stuff that is, and move on to Friedland, which was another little town, provincial town in Mecklenburg. Again, about 50 or 60 kilometers southwest of Anklam. And there we located in a relatively small hangar and concentrated our effort and facilities just towards keeping the absolutely necessary things going, that is improve the bias and governance that needed improvement. There was still an effort made for a second generation of VAS that we kept working on, but this second generation never came to carry. It was just the improved version of the original VAS.
Okay.
During all this time, we had to take care, of course, of the need of the troops, because rockets were already in the hands of the troops. So on this occasion, I had to go down to the firing range at southern Poland at this time to take down with me a number of replacement VAS, because due to the fact that the troops were a little bit slow in the beginning and preparing firing, the low temperature of the oxygen tank iced up quite a bit, and
go to side two.